time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up! Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Isaac Wilson.
It's going to be kind of an interesting podcast this time around. We went to Indie PopCon. I talked to a lot of folks from Marvel creators, creator Roy Thomas, who'd been with Marvel and DC since 1965. We'll also talk with some of our favorites, some friends of the podcast, and some new folks about their creations. But in the meantime, let's just kind of summarize. Isaac, what'd you think of Indie PopCon?
I honestly, there was not a lot for me this time around. There was pretty much just one celebrity, Johnny Ongmosh, that I wanted to get an autograph for, but I forgot to bring whatever I wanted to get signed by him. That giant poster right there.
He's does the voice for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure for one of
Jonathan Joestar.
Okay.
And other than that, I didn't really have any interest in any autographs or pictures. We got Metatron though.
Yeah, so we did get to meet Metatron.
That wasn't really like on my list, but I guess it was a nice little side thing.
Yeah.
But other than that, there was also not that much merchandise that I was looking for, other than the Left 4 Dead shirt and hat.
Yeah, you did get a Left 4 Dead. That was pretty cool. It took me a while to figure out what it was. You had to explain it to me, because it's been so long since I've watched you play the game. How long has it been since you played the game?
If my computer wouldn't take forever, I could boot up Steam and tell you the last time I played it. But
it'd take forever to do that.
Yeah. I'd have to open Steam and then open the game.
We don't have time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. So what was it? The poster, why didn't you get his autograph otherwise?
Because I don't know.
You just wanted a poster?
I don't want an autograph of just a picture or something like that. Unless it's...
Well, yeah, we did get to meet Metatron, or some of you know him as Booger, or, I can't think of the character's name from, Better
Snot.
Off Dead. Or Snot from Family, or,
American Dad.
And, Curtis Armstrong. And I just wanted to meet him. Plus, here's the deal. The lines, for some of them, were just ridiculous. I also wanted to meet Matt Ryan, Constantine, but his line was just really long. But the big thing that detracted me from going up and talking to him, he was charging $40 for an autograph, $40 for an autograph, $30 for a selfie, and $60 for the combination. I'm like, that is ridiculous. $30 for a selfie. Curtis Armstrong, and I think Robert Carradine also, he was there. It's a couple of nerds, of course. But they were just charging, I think, like $30 for the autograph, and then the selfie was free. I'm like, that's the way you should do it. It's, you know, I've heard somebody complain about how all it is celebrities. It's a celebrity petting zoo, and they're just, you know, raking in trash bags full of 20s because of all the things that, you know, just selling nothing. I mean, your fans, yeah, you're going to make some money off of it. Well, they're paying you to be there. The cons are paying them, so they're getting money out of that. I don't know. It's a bit frustrating, but... Curtis Armstrong, they weren't going overboard with it, but it was, and plus he was a nice guy, you know.
Yeah.
Anything surprise you about him?
Yeah, how short he was.
Yeah, yeah. He always seems bigger in the shows, in the movies, and the TV shows and stuff, but he was a little shorter than both of us, but personality wise, huge, and is nice to talk to. And the way he looks at you with his kind of like his head tilted down and looking up, it's weird. It's like you see that in a lot of his performances, and it's like, hey, that's the way he actually talks. So, but anyway, so Indie PopCon, very entertaining and in some aspects for me. I got to talk with some people, and the merchandise was all there. There was some stuff, but, you know, really, I just didn't feel like spending a lot of money this time around. And I got what I wanted. There were some things I did want, but they're a little bit above my range for the day, and I'm like, yeah, I'll wait some other time. The rest of this podcast, we're going to talk to different people at Indie PopCon, and, you know, basically artists, creators, etc., talk about what they're doing. We got Brian K. Morris, we're going to talk about with Mike Kaysinger, we're going to talk with Henri Compan, who has created this really cool Korean naval hero from the 16th century comic book. Really cool. Wait till you hear that. And then we'll talk about a guy that's developed a card game. And we're going to talk with Roy Thomas from Marvel DC. So that's coming up. And after all the interviews, we're going to talk about Spider-Man.
Here once again at booth number are you? 739. Brian K. Morris, the infamous author that we've talked to several times before. Brian, how are you doing?
I am doing great, especially now that I see you here, Gil. How are you?
Pretty good. Let me get that five out of my pocket here.
Yeah, thank you. The check did clear.
So you can pretend you're my friend. But, Brian, once again, great seeing you at another con.
Seriously.
Selling your wares.
Thank you.
You got the new Skyman book officially here now.
Yes.
And last time I caught you, I don't think you had the Skyman printed yet.
Not quite. I believe last time we talked, it was just in the final process of being edited.
That's right.
But now we've got it out. It is selling literally like hotcakes.
I could imagine that. And yeah. I always wonder why hotcakes were the things that sold so much that people compared those to.
Yeah, and I also wondered at one point in my life why it was so funny to get drunk and put a lampshade in your head until one day I actually got that drunk and put a lampshade in my head. And people were laughing appreciably because of this. So I have a scientific baseline for it now.
So we'll just like accept that now, and we'll now accept the hotcakes. But does your book taste good with syrup?
It sure does.
Okay. All right. That's all I want to know.
Okay.
But anyway, Skyman, the original Skyman Battles the Master of Steam out. Now, I was going to bring my Kindle for you to sign,
right,
but I forgot it. It's charging on my desk.
I understand, so. But this means I'll be on a future episode of the show, folks. So be anticipating. Set that calendar date to when I will return.
Yeah, we'll see about that one. No, actually, Brett, I run into you in so many cons. I mean, you got Indiana Comic Con.
Right.
Well, you're always down at that Superman celebration.
Right.
Down in Metropolis, Illinois. Right. You're going to be at C4 or the NerdCon or a combination of the two now.
I'll walk between the both of them.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're making the con scene circuit. What is it that right now that you're pushing hard and heavy? Because you always got something each time.
I always do, but right now I am pushing, of course, the original Skyman Battles the Master scene because I believe in the book and I think it's a good, fun read.
Now, this is based on an original character from way back, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And to give you some idea of the pedigree, Skyman was created by three different people. The editor, Vincent Sullivan, who edited Action Comics number 1 and Detective Comics 27.
Oh, those are important ones.
Those are very vital, not just in the history of comics, but the history of our culture.
Right,
So, yeah, and he also went on in the 50s after he helped create Skyman to create the original Ghost Rider.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Western hero that Marvel based their original version on. Then the original writer, the guy who wrote the scripts for Skyman over in the very beginning, under the name of Paul Dean, was actually Gardner Fox, who wrote and created the Justice Society of America, Justice League of America, Hawkman, Flash, Adam Strange. He wrote Doctor Strange for a while for Marvel.
Oh, wow.
And many, many different companies during the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So highly prolific. Also a novelist as well. So he was a very talented guy and very prolific one. And Skyman was, you know, just one more. He also wrote Batman. He is credited with writing the episodes of Batman where he used the gun.
Oh.
In the very early days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he comes with a pedigree.
You're talking about, are those the serials? Is that what those were?
No, not the serials, but the original Detective Comic appearances.
Oh, okay.
Predating Robin.
Okay.
Okay. And then the artist was a man named Ogden Whitney, who is not quite as well known, but he did a variety of romance and westerns and horror titles in the 50s and 60s for the American Comics group. But he also did the Two Gun Kid and Nick Fury for Marvel.
Oh, wow.
He also did No Man and the Thunder Agents for Tower Comics, one of the great, great cult favorites from back then. And he also created the Fat Fury Herbie Popnecker.
Okay.
Which was this little nebbish who was as wide as he was tall. And he got powers from the lollipops he ate. Women swooned over him. His parents thought he was a waste of flesh.
I'm going to have to find this one because that sounds like cosplay for me right there.
All I need are the little round glasses and the little bowl haircut, and I'm there.
Really?
So,
okay.
Yeah,
I might have to look into this one.
It's fun. It's genuinely a great, great title.
Well, now, with all this pedigree behind the original Skyman, you're getting in the action here with a story. How did you get involved in all this? What made you want to write a Skyman novel?
Well, I fell in love with the character, and it just so happens that Skyman is, although the stories are in public domain, the character is not.
Right.
Ron Franz published one issue about Skyman called The Return of the Skyman back in the mid-1980s with art by Steve Ditko.
Okay.
Okay, who all your listeners should know that name. And the company went under quickly because many distributors were going under. Like, thank you. Thank you.
I think that's for YouTubers. But anyway.
For me too? Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
For me too? And you too. But anyway, Ace Comics went under in the mid-80s, but uh-huh. Ron held on to the character.
Okay.
I did some transcripts for Ron for a magazine, Charlton Spotlight, and Ron called to thank me for my work, and then we got to be friends, started talking, and then one day he was telling me about the attempt that he was undergoing at the time to revive Skyman. Well, of course, being the opportunist that I am, shall we say, and I was half teasing about it, I said, well, you know what you need to do, Ron, is you need to diversify your income stream by having me write a novel about him. And I was vastly experienced because I believe I just finished my second book at that time.
Oh, hey,
so
you know,
I had it down by then. And his response to my statement was, well, then get busy then. So the next thing you know, We wound up writing a book, and Ron is very happy with it. Plus, there was to be an alternative cover for the Return of the Skyman comic in the 80s by a very talented artist named Pat Boyette, who did hundreds and hundreds of pages of comic books. He's also worked on Blackhawk, Bloodstone for Marvel, but he did thousands and thousands of pages for Charlton Comics on their horror and their romance and their war titles. And he had done a full cover with a color guide that Ron let me use.
Oh.
And so when you see the color on the front of the book,
right,
that was based on Pat Boyette's original color guide.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Been sharpened by a couple of great artists, Trevor Hawkins, who does my other covers, and Randall Bishop, who is also a very talented writer and artist in his own right. So
this isn't just a story. This sounds like a whole ordeal you put yourself through for this book.
It took about 2 years to get this book out, and I would be remiss if I did not also add that the foreword is by comics legend Roy Thomas. And one of the reasons I tell people to come here to Indie PopCon is this may be the only time in your life you can get both of us to sign the book at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've only seen each other like once every 10 years. So that's pretty vital there. But Roy is a great guy, and he was more than gracious to do my introduction.
Yeah, so. It says here he's a comics icon and historian. I would always say that about you, too. Well,
thank you.
I mean, you've got your line of comics you're doing. You've got the Kickstarter, and that brings me up to another point. Let's go ahead and jump subjects here.
Let's do.
You just completed the Kickstarter. I know because I helped with it.
Yes, you did.
I always love saying that about a Kickstarter. I could just donate $1 and I still help, you know.
That's true, but you did a little better than that. Yeah. And people who follow the Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove will get to see their favorite podcaster in a future issue. I vow.
I hope so. I mean, it will happen. I forgot. Was I going to die horribly or do I survive? I think I survive.
I'll let you choose.
Okay.
I'll let you choose. But we won't tell the viewer because then they'll have to buy the comic.
Now that Kickstarter ended a few months ago.
Right.
And you got fully funded, of course.
110% actually.
Nice. Even above and beyond is always a good.
Yes.
So when is the first issue coming out?
Well, today, if we can date this, is July 8th. 2017,
mm-hmm.
as of today, and I talked to our creative director, Charles D. Moissant,
mm-hmm.
just on Thursday, so this is about as up-to-date as we're going to get on this. The art is all in.
Okay.
The coloring is all done.
Oh.
Of the three stories that are in it, one is needing the lettering to be done, but that is almost concluded. We have the cover. And then we have to put, of course, you know, the editorial page together,
right,
and all the indicia and all the legalese and such. But,
and the Guilty Wilson page.
Of course, yeah. Well, that'll be a whole issue.
I know. Oh, yeah, true.
That'll be the spinoff book. I'll call it 98% done.
Nice.
And it could be available, and probably will be available, by the time of the Crawford County Comic-Con.
C4 coming up at the end of July.
Which I will be at as a guest, and it'll be a lot of fun, and everyone should come out there because I will be there, and more importantly, Guilty Wilson will be there.
Well, maybe. I mean, not that it's important. I mean, I will be there.
Yes, you will.
Important or not, I don't know about that.
Ask me.
So you should have a copy or have that ready by then. You'll be selling it at C4 if it's everything's done, ready
to
go.
You betcha.
Now, and I'm sure Charles D. Moissant will be selling his copies wherever he's going to be.
Yeah.
So after Indie PopCon, after C4, where else are you going to be?
Well, July is pretty packed for me right now. Next weekend, I will be at the Spook Show at Mattoon, Illinois, at the Cross Country Mall.
Okay.
And then following that, I've got a library appearance in Petersburg, Indiana.
Okay.
Also, I will be at the Dark History Convention on July 28th. That's a two-day show, but I'll only be there on the Friday because I'm doing the Crawford County Comic-Con on the 29th. So I'm going to have a pretty full July, and I'm really looking forward to seeing people there.
Catch him at these cons. You can always get his stuff. Now, okay, we'll start with the Haunted Tales of Bachelor's Grove. Is that right? Did I get it right?
The Haunting Tales of Bachelor's
Haunting Tales.
Grove.
Darn it. I'm always close.
You're doing you. That's what I called it for the longest time. Don't feel bad.
Oh, okay. Now, where can we get that? Where can somebody get a copy of that right now or in the future when it's ready?
Well, when it's ready, if you see myself or Charles C. Moisant, the craziest man in comics.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm number two from having dealt with him. If you see one of us at a show, then you know we will have that book available. We will not be offering it through Diamond yet.
Okay.
We will probably start offering it with the third issue, I believe.
Okay.
But right now, if you pledge to our Kickstarter campaign, you will be getting it in the mail.
Oh, you can still pledge to that?
I don't believe so. No, since this
darn.
Is Kickstarter. You had your chance, people, but we will be looking for helpers on number two.
That's right.
So, you know, loosen the walls. Thank you. But hey, if you see us at a show, we will have copies for sale. Plus, we sometimes do mail order. And you can also get in touch with us via email, and we'll shoot you a price on how to get a copy. And Charles' website is www.silverphoenix.net. And I have a brand new one that I have put together. It's www.freelance-words.net. And it's dash as in the little symbol,
right.
Not spelled out or nothing. So
okay, freelance-words.com. Yeah, okay, that's it.
It takes a while. I'm still wrestling
with
that
link
myself.
To it.
Yeah, please put a link to it. Thank you, my friend.
So, and also all your other books and everything, they're available on Amazon. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Just do a search for Brian middle initial K Morris, and they can't
fans.
Get enough of it.
Your fans are just crazy.
They are, but I love each and every one, and I know them by name. But just go to www.amazon.com/author/Brian K. Morris. It'll take you straight to my sales page.
That's the important part, is find the stuff. I think I've got, let's see, one, two, three. I've got three of your books. I don't have Metahumans or Conflict yet.
Well,
I got to work my way through them.
This show isn't over yet. You could own them by the time you sign off.
Probably by the time I leave this table, something will happen.
That's
but,
right.
But yeah, definitely check out Brian's work on Amazon. If you're not going to be at one of the cons this summer that he mentioned, check them out. They're worth reading. Santa Stein was one of the most hilarious things I ever read.
Thank you.
Volcana, I've got halfway, but I stopped because I want to read Skyman. I want to read Skyman first.
I don't blame you.
And I started on Volcana. I'm like, no, I got to do Skyman first. I don't know why.
I understand.
But now you got a sequel to Volcana coming out. Is that correct?
I'm actually working on the sequel. It will be called The Prometheus Cover-Up, where she goes to look up whatever happened to the Firebringer.
Okay.
And hijinks will ensue. Plus, we are also working on a novella with Volcana that will take place between the first and second books, where she's wrestling with her powers a little. Oh. And she's going to be visiting Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
No way.
You yes
really,
way.
Nice crossover. I
yes.
like this.
So this will
if
be,
she meets Skyman, then I'll be really happy.
don't put your wallet away quite yet.
Nice. All right. Well, Brian K. Morris, once again, a pleasure seeing you as always. We'll see you several times, I'm sure, and great talking with you.
Well, it's always been my pleasure, and it will continue to be my pleasure to be your friend and your guest. Thank you, Gil. You're great. So are your listeners.
With a recommendation from Brian K. Morris to Henri Compan. I had to make sure I get the name right. Henri.
You got it.
First of all, where's that name come from?
Well, actually, my name itself is French, Henri. It's derived from Henry.
Right.
And my last name is actually French, but I'm Russian and Jewish.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but actually, Russia had a major influence from French culture, like in the 1700s and 1800s.
Right.
So that explains why there's
right.
That, so.
Well, see, I've always seen Henri written as H-E-N-R-I.
Yeah, that's the French. It's French for Henri, you know.
Yeah,
so
right, right.
My parents decided to be literal. They didn't want to just name me Henry. They had to be all creative. And
oh,
stuff.
Heck yeah, I don't blame them. But Henri Compan is spelled O-N-R-I-E, and then Compan is K-O-M-P-A-N. Look this guy up. My gosh, coming over here and looking at the comics and everything you got going, You got a foreword by Stan Lee in your book.
Yeah, let me tell you about this.
Come on.
Let me tell you about this. So the book's about a Korean admiral that battled the Japanese in the 1500s. He was outnumbered 10-1 against them, and he beat them 23 times in a row without ever losing a single battle. And this is all based on a true story, and the name of my comic book series is called Yi Sun Shin. It's a trilogy of comics. The first four books are called Warrior and Defender, and then we got a sequel that already came out that's like our Empire Strikes Back. It's
okay.
Called Fallen Avenger.
Okay.
And, yeah, I didn't do this alone, actually. I co-wrote this book with David Anthony Kraft. He did a lot of stuff for Marvel back in the day. He pretty much edited everybody you could imagine. He even worked at DC and did a ton of stuff for them. He wrote World's Finest for a long time. He's my co-writer. And we do layouts together, and, you know, he's also my co-editor on the series. And I've been working on this now for about 7 years, and this book has sold over 65,000 units without a publisher.
Wow.
And without a distributor. We got Stan Lee, who wrote the foreword to the first graphic novel, and we got a second graphic novel coming out soon. It's a beast of a book. It features a foreword by, check this out, a guy who completed a very difficult martial arts challenge called the 100-man fight, where he fought 100 black belts back-to-back-to-back.
Okay.
And,
wow,
like, survived and, like, did all this. And he's the 19th person in the world to ever have done this.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So he's just awesome. There's a great documentary about him called 100 Man Fight.
Okay.
Dude's a total badass. I got to hang out with him in New York and, like, drink beers with him. And he's Australian, so, you know, he could drink, like, 800 beers. And I'm like... I can only keep up with like 1.5.
Right. You know. Nice.
Yeah.
You've got the book. Okay. So you've got two edition or what, volumes of it, I
yeah,
guess?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
two
yeah,
volumes
yeah.
of. Now, are you what, coming out with a third?
Oh,
or
yeah, yeah,
you,
yeah.
How
yeah,
far
yeah,
are you planning on going?
Well, we got four issues left. We just hired a new creator for it. He's the artist who's going to finish it off. And you're going to see the artwork. The artwork's about to improve like tremendously. I can't tell you who the artist is yet or... You know, what we're doing with it yet, but it's going to conclude the entire trilogy, and after that, we're done with the whole series.
Oh, wow.
And I also have another graphic novel coming out in October at New York Comic Con. I have a graphic novel about my grandfather's life. He was a Russian-Jewish soldier in World War II. He actually was pulled off the front lines and thrown into a Russian prison camp for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
But before he died, I interviewed him, and he told me a bunch of his war stories, and I collected it into a graphic novel. And,
wow. Well, my next question was going to be, where do you get your stories from? Well, now, that's an awesome source.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Now, what about the original trilogy here? Where'd you get the idea stories for these?
Well, I saw a TV show about this guy like a number of years ago. It was awesome. If you ever get a chance to check it out, it's called The Immortal Yi Sun Shin. They have it on Amazon.
Okay.
It's like 104 episodes.
Holy
it's all in
God.
Korean, yeah. It's a pretty... Just watching this show is like a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make something that was more applicable to like the world audience. You
right.
Know, you have to be Korean or into Korean stuff in order to understand and appreciate this guy here.
Right.
And what's great about Yi Sun Shin is he's Korea's greatest hero. And we... really wanted to pay homage to the Korean people because they were so helpful and so supportive to us throughout our entire journey so far.
Oh, wow.
You know, they're all like clawing and threatening to burn my house down if I don't send them the second graphic novel soon. So
nice.
Yeah, we just had to finish that up. So it's a huge,
okay.
You know, it's a huge stone lifted off my shoulders.
You got basically a historical comic book background from what I'm seeing here.
Yeah.
What else have you done in comic books?
This takes up all my time, man. Alright, well, aside from that, not very much in all honesty. I did work on a Tales from the Crypt story, which I co-wrote with Dave Kraft.
Okay.
And that came out last year, and it had a little very limited print run, and I managed to score a few copies from the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
I got like four of the original covers left, and then I'm sold out forever with
Uh-oh.
It. So good luck.
So basically, your big thing is historical comic books or historical graphic novels.
I wouldn't say that. It's just sort of like, you know, where my inspiration pulls me, you know.
Right.
The thing about my grandpa's story was, you know, my kids never got to meet their grandpa.
Okay.
I want them to know who their grandpa was. So
oh, nice,
I committed myself to this, and, you know, he was a really good man, and I loved him very much. With Yi Sun Shin, you know, he's a hero. How often do you hear about people throughout history who actually stood up against, like, mass oppression
mm-hmm.
and didn't, never were defeated? I mean, you'd never hear about stuff like that.
Right.
This guy, like, he protected his people. He saved his country. He's a worldwide hero. And not only that, he was such a wise tactician that they still study, like, you still learn about him today in officer schools around the world.
That's the big series on Amazon supporting your comics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Okay, so what got you into comics world altogether anyway? Anything particular stand out there why you did this?
Well, I've always loved comics, and I've always loved film and games and stuff like that. I figured I always wanted to be working in entertainment in some capacity. Comics seemed like the best place to start for me because you have more flexibility in terms of how you present things. Believe it or not, the budgets are a little bit lower than producing your own movie.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Okay.
Not by much, but it's you know, I've loved comics my whole life. I still love comics today. Good comics.
And, mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'm always reading something. I wanted to make a good comic series. That's it. And that's the only thing that ever compels me to work in comics.
Yeah.
You know, I could be doing sci-fi, I could be doing, you know, superhero stuff. As long as I'm inspired by what I'm writing, you know, I'll give it 110%, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, beautiful stuff. How can they get a hold of you and get a hold of some of these comics?
All right, check it out. You go to my website. It's www.yisonshin.com. That's yisonshin.com. I will sign and ship your books to you. It doesn't matter where you live in the world. I will sign and ship your books to you.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, because a lot of times, that's the best thing about being at a con, is like the artist, the author, whatever's right there. They can sign it right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You order it online, you don't get that.
Right, exactly.
You're offering that. I like that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. You know, it's all about the customer.
Exactly. And yisunshin.com. I'll be posting a link to that on our NerdUp page. Wow, Henri, great meeting you. I'm glad Brian sent me your way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
excellent.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Gil T. Wilson here at Indie PopCon talking with the legend, Roy Thomas. Do you like being called the legend, first of all?
No, I don't. Not exactly. A legend, you know, is usually something that isn't true.
You know, true, you're right.
To say legend or legendary, that usually sounds like Paul Bunyan or Pecos Bill or something. You know, I'm a real question.
But you're a real person. I'm sitting right next to you. I'm talking to you. In fact, I got a photo with you for the page.
To me, and also even in comics, the legendary people, I mean, that's Stan and Jack Kirby.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Kubert and those guys and everything. And listen, I don't use that kind of term for Frank Miller. Forget about me.
Well, I will consider you a legend. I mean, you created the Vision. I mean, it goes on and on. You wrote for Defenders, all this stuff. Anyway, a mutual friend sent me over here to talk to you. Actually, I was probably going to find you anyway, but Brian K. Morris, you did a foreword on his book, The Original Skyman, and he's a mutual friend of the podcast, and I got to first ask you, how awesome was it working with Brian Morris?
Well, it was really great. What we mostly did was that he would transcribe things for the magazine Alter Ego, and he was a really good transcriber, and uh-huh. also, you know, helpful. Sometimes he'd find a piece of artwork too for us and so forth. It seems like a nice guy. I've run him to a couple times at conventions, and I'm glad to see that he's, you know, actually got legitimate work now, finally.
Yeah, finally, yeah. But, I mean, I don't know about legitimate, but it's work, I guess.
It's work, anyway.
Let's talk about your history. Let's forget about Brian.
Brian who?
Exactly. First of all, how long have you been in this comics biz?
Oh, I started in professionally in 1965.
Wow.
So it's been a couple of years.
A few. That's the year I was born. I hate to say that, but...
It's the year I was reborn.
There you go. What got you into the comics industry? I mean, at that time, it wasn't like the coolest thing in the world it is now. I mean,
No, it definitely was not. Not to the general public.
Right.
It was to me.
Right. Oh, yeah,
know.
Definitely.
I mean, I was working on... at that stage, I was publishing... And editing and doing a lot of the writing for the earliest edition of Alter Ego, which was my comics fan magazine about heroic comics. At the same time, I was teaching school, so I was sending the magazine around to editors, not as a job application, but just, you know, because I was hoping I would get some information, or I could get an interview with them, or get some artwork from them, or something like that. And I got to be, I guess, known by some of the editors, especially Julius Schwartz at DC,
the
editor of Flash, Green Lantern, and Justice League. I exchanged a letter or two with Mort Weiser, the Superman editor, who was the one who eventually offered me the first job.
Oh.
And one or two little notes with Stan Lee, but not very much, really. And my friend Jerry Bales, who had started Alter Ego, did much more correspondence with Stan than I did, and with a few other people, and I sort of got to be known. And eventually one day, Weisiger wrote me a letter, offered me a job as the assistant editor on the Superman comics, which I took, and it didn't suit me, and Mort and I didn't feel like our personalities got along too well, so I'd wanted to meet Stan, and then after a week or so, when I finally did, and he offered me a job, I quit DC and went to work at Marvel.
Now, at the time, was there a lot of that going around where they go back and forth between the two?
Oh, no, not at all. Because very little. In fact, DC in particular frowned on the idea of any of their artists, so that you had a number of people moonlighting for Marvel.
Ah, I see.
At the particular time that I get to work there, the main one would have been the artist of the Sub-Mariner feature, who was just about to start on Iron Man, and that was a guy named Adam Austin.
Oh, okay.
And it was actually Gene Colan. But he was drawing Romance Comics, and he felt they felt that if they seemed disloyal, even though there wasn't as much work as they would like, and Marvel paid not nearly as well as DC Comics at that stage.
Okay.
But the fact remains that, you know, it was a little extra work, and maybe it was more interesting, and they were tired of doing the Romance Comics, things like that. So, and let's see, well, who else did we have during that early period, different times before and after I came? Gil Kane did his first job or two there under the name Scott Edward, the name of his son. And let's see, there was Jack Abel was working under the name Gary Michaels.
Okay.
And George Russo's worked as, did a lot of inking as George Bell. And there were three or four other people like that. Mickey Demio, who was doing work on the Hulk, was Mike Esposito, who was an inker for DC.
So that's the way they hid their
And the funny thing, I would have thought that some of these guys' art were art styles that the editors could have figured out, but I don't think the DC people paid enough attention.
Well, I'm a Make Mine Marvel guy anyway, so it's like, I'm glad to see you went off into the Marvel world. I mean, after all, you brought us some great stuff.
I'm glad I did. I'm glad I got a chance. I think I'm very lucky that my Superman employer turned out to be unpleasant enough to me that I was willing to quit, because otherwise I'd have felt a real loyalty, but when I was offered another job, I'd have been unlikely to quit.
Well, okay, out of all your years of doing comics, what's your proudest moment? What's the one thing you've done that you'll point that out every time?
I don't know. Probably the thing I did that was the most valuable, which had little to do with me, was bringing Star Wars to Marvel.
Oh, really?
In the months before the movie came out, because it made a tremendous pile of money for Marvel,
right?
Which they didn't think it was going to do, I had to talk them into doing it.
Oh, did?
And it almost saved the company. I learned later. I didn't know at the time because I was out in L.A. and I wasn't keeping much tabs on it. Marvel was selling comics, but the combination of different things, inflation and different things, were eating into the cover price faster than they could really raise it, and they were losing stores. They weren't being sold in like dimes, drugstores so much anymore. There wasn't any direct market going yet. Comic book stores, you know, really weren't a big thing yet. So they were really on the verge, which I didn't know, but at that stage they really sort of had a year or two during which to turn around or go out of business and be sold off or discontinued or whatever.
Right.
And one of the things, especially, that evidently helped them make enough money to bridge that gap until they could reorganize was the Star Wars. So that comic and my bringing it to them sort of saved them, but I can't claim any special prestige because I only did it because I thought it might be interesting work. I didn't do it to make any great money for Marvel, and I certainly didn't make any great money out of it.
Well, it was a smart move for anything.
It turned out to be a stupidly smart move.
No, that's a great way to put that. Now, currently you're here representing the Hero Initiative, helping comic creators in need. I noticed that all your autographs, everything you're doing here at your table, you're doing it for a donation to the Hero Initiative. Yes. What's this all about?
Well, it was started under a different name about 17 years ago, and I've been on the disbursement board ever since, deciding who gets the money. And, you know, sometimes we find out ourselves about people that need some money, and, you know, it's to help a person who's been in the comic book field long enough, which means at least a few years of work here and there and so forth, we're not supporting people forever, but sometimes a couple of $1,000 or so, even a little more or a little less, will make a lot of difference to a person who's just gotten in some temporary trouble or they got sick.
Right.
And it was started originally by the people who thought it up because of the Golden Age people, because after all, that was the age where there weren't anything like royalties or incentive payments or anything like that. And these people, you know, and Jack Kirby was one of them, so was Stan, except he had a staff job going on, but all these people had worked in that period. And, you know, they had no pension plan. They had no hospitalization or anything like that. So this was a way to help some of these people out. The funny thing is, of course, the Golden Age people now, 17 years later, are all, they were going then, and they're pretty much all very, except for a very few, gone now. Even the Silver Age people are kind of disappearing fast.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we've sort of moved on from helping Golden Age people to sort of silver and later. Now we suddenly find that some of the people that need help are people that are, you know, considerably younger than I am, who got in the field, you know, and I don't know, they were maybe drawing comics in the early 90s during the big speculation boom, and
right.
they thought those days were going to go on forever.
Right.
I came home one day from a trip, my wife and I, and discovered a big check in the mail, by far the biggest check I ever got, you know, from comics up to that time, and as far as for pure comics, ever. And it was a one-time kind of thing, but you know, my wife immediately took the check and she puts it in the bank in investments.
Okay.
But a lot of these guys, what happened is they end up, you know, like I would have done when I was young or if I was single or whatever, just go out and spend it.
Disposable
thinking
income.
It's going to go. That's why they call it disposable
yeah,
income.
Yeah.
I disposed of it as fast as it came in. And, you know, and so did they. And the next thing you know, they either don't have anything or they've got a house with a big mortgage and everything like that, and,
right.
you know, and now the money isn't coming in to support it. Well, we can't help them stay in that situation, but we can farm a little bridge
yeah,
to help
yeah.
them get out. Maybe they're going to have to move to a different place, but at least they're going to get out from fresh in debt. So we do what little we can. We can't help. Sometimes after a while, we find we can't help anybody anymore because they're just not making any progress, and we can't help them. But as much as we can, we try to give money. And luckily, the combination of the comic book people, artists either donating their work or their time or something, or the fans donating at conventions like this, or just sending in money or whatever.
Right.
And the companies, Marvel and a couple of the others, cooperate a lot on helping us. And we, you know, we end up with enough money that we're able to help a lot of people, much more than I thought we would be able to, and I'm really glad about that.
That's definitely great. So let me give the website here. It's heroinitiative.org. So people that want to contribute to this, you know,
yeah.
comic book art, it's like,
yeah.
you know, in the music industry,
yeah.
a lot of people raising money to help musicians never had health insurance.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what you're doing for comic artists. That they don't have that background
yeah.
for it.
Yeah.
So heroinitiative.org. And Roy, thanks for joining me on
Thank
the podcast,
you.
And it's a pleasure
you.
Meeting you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
With Tommy Day, he's a creator. That's an amazing title to have, creator. With By the Rights Game. Now, first of all, you gave me a little elevator pitch here a second ago. What is this By the Rights Game? What is it?
It's a movie pitching game. So it's a party game, kind of in the same genre as like Apples to Apples, Cards Against Humanity. But it's all about pitching movies to the producer. And the producer changes each round, and so everyone else has to pitch their ideas based on four decks of cards.
Now, on an average gameplay, how long would it take to play this game?
Not very long. If you play with, like, you know, the average group size might be four or five people, and you can play for half hour. Usually, like, a good rule of thumb is as long as everybody gets to be producer twice. But then if you play with a larger group, it's going to take a while. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, but it's also one of those games that can take a short time or a long time if you just
yeah.
enjoy keep playing.
Yeah, and, like, we play D&D, and, like, we like to use it as kind of a warm-up to D&D because, you know, it involves storytelling and kind of improv and stuff a little bit.
Right.
So
basically, give me the idea of the cards. How does this gameplay go?
So the original idea I had was just like breaking a movie down into four cards. So you've got genre, and then you've got two cards that describe the hero. You've got the descriptor and the hero. So you could have like homeless as a descriptor and like superhero as your hero. And then you've got the plot card.
Okay.
And so like in order, it gives you like the elevator pitch version of your movie. Like it kind of reads as a sentence. And then from there, you can elaborate on as much as you want.
Nice. So basically, you get random cards and you just try to make something, and the one that's got the best.
You get
the producer's the one that ends up buying.
You get two from each deck, so you have a little bit of choice, so it's not completely random. And then there's like 100 million possible combinations in the game. So,
Have any of these pitches from your game made it to Hollywood yet?
Actually, just yesterday, because we wrote this like a couple years ago, and yesterday I like pitched the new Jumanji movie because it was like board game adaptation about like it's like some kind of high school kid getting sucked into a video game where he has to beat every level to return home. So,
not bad. So buytherightsgame.com, that's the website. That's where they can check you out.
Yep.
Now, you're here today at Indie PopCon.
Yeah, and it's on Amazon.
And you can find it on Amazon as well? Where else? How, you guys are going to be making any appearances in any other cons or anything?
Yeah, we'll be at Gen Con in August. Entrepreneurs Avenue area.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of our first event where we've actually had the games on hand. And so this summer's kind of our debut. So.
Nice. Yeah, it's a very simple-looking game, But I can see the promise of definitely having some fun at it, because I play Cards Against Humanity. There's T-shirt. There's a whole bunch of that type of a game.
Yeah.
But I've always liked the idea of maybe I could make my first movie just out of these cards.
Yeah. So. I always wanted to make movies, and so that never happened. But it's like, well, I made a game where you can make movies. So
there you go. So that's how you came up with the idea?
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, how long has this been in the works? So this is the first summer you're doing. How long have you been
2015
working?
2015 is when it started. Kind of late 2015, we kind of came up with it and then did a Kickstarter and everything. So
nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, once again, that's Buy the Rights Game, and it's buytherightsgame.com. Tommy Day is the creator. Tommy, thanks for joining us on the podcast. Here with Rebecca Casavant with Ruppets. Extremely unique idea. I saw this on the website, on the Indie PopCon website, and I said, I got to stop at that booth. These things are cool. They're puppets, but they're superheroes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Rebecca, first of all, welcome to the Nerd Up Podcast.
Thank you.
Now, what gave you the idea to start doing these puppets?
I did a puppet Christian ministry at my church a long time ago, and, mm-hmm. and people liked the puppets I was creating. And friends would ask, hey, my son's birthday's coming up. Can you do a Batman puppet or a Chewbacca puppet? And I'm like, you know, let me try that. And I started doing that. And 9 years have gone by. And,
oh, wow.
And I just love it. I make all different creations, and it's so much fun. And people walk by, and their jaw just drops because they're like, what is this?
They're cute. I mean, you got Deadpool, you got Batman, Spider-Man. These are just the ones I got. Now, what's this one here?
My name is Stacy.
Now, if this were a video, you'd see Stacy as this very fuzzy... what are you, Stacy?
I'm just a fuzzy monster.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So you got just not just superheroes, but Stacy.
Yep, original guys. That's what I am. I'm original.
See, that's the problem with interviewing puppeteers and puppets. I don't know which one to talk to. And I'd rather talk to the puppet most of the time.
Most people do.
Nothing personal against you, Rebecca. But,
that's
all
right.
Now, okay, so you've been doing this for, like you say, 9 years?
Yeah, 9 years, yeah.
Wow. What made you want to go into the superhero besides the people asking? What made you think, oh, you know, I could do more of those?
I'm a nerd at heart. You
awesome.
Know? So I wanted to do things that I really liked. So I did the whole Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation series.
Oh, wow.
Because that's my jam.
Okay.
And I loved it. I had so much fun making them. And then I made a whole bunch of Star Wars. So Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Chewbacca and Yoda and the Wampa. And I'm slowly making all these crazy superhero nerd kind
of
puppets. And pretty soon I had about 30, 35 puppets. And my husband was like, you need to figure out something else to do other than just make the puppets.
In other words, you're spending all the money making them. You needed them bringing it in somehow, right?
Somehow, yep.
So that developed into what, I guess it's Ruppets.com.
Ruppets.com,
yep. R-U-P-P-I-T-S.
Correct.
And I'll put a link on the Nerd Up Podcast page for this. They can order these things?
Absolutely. So I have an Etsy shop, and I have a Facebook shop. So really easy to find me on Facebook, and then look through my shop, and I have different things all the time, and try to find new things at least once a month, debut a new puppet, and try and rotate through different things, and it's just a lot of fun.
Well, I think you've hit on something that's going to be constantly marketable. I mean, first of all, superheroes will never go away.
Right.
And then second of all, you got, like, I see Minions coming up. I think that's a dragon from How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, Toothless.
Okay. And I mean, I can see Jordy LaForge up there. So you've got a wide variety that's going to stay relevant. So that's always the good part. And
awesome.
If you can keep making money, that's even better, right?
Exactly.
So... do people ever ask you for custom orders?
I do tons and tons of custom orders.
And you do them, okay.
Yeah, I actually do more custom stuff than I do what I consider my stock puppets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm constantly asked at shows, but even through my website and Facebook, to do custom orders, so I do that all the time.
Do you make the circuit on doing the con circuit over the summer? Do you go to a lot of cons, or is Indie PopCon?
So I do about 10 shows a year.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a busy season.
It is. Yeah, for sure.
Well, okay. So if anybody wants to get a hold of you, first of all, Ruppets.com, R-U-P-P-I-T-S.com. And you said you're on Facebook?
Yep.
And Etsy?
Yep.
And Ruppets is not a difficult word to find, I don't think.
No, if you Google it, I'm it.
Good. That's good. Now, how'd the name Ruppets come about?
Because my first name is Rebecca, and they're my puppets. So.
But you misspelled it at the end.
I did, because they're kind of it. They're kind of... I feel like they're a little bit, you know... they're more people. They're more. They're my peeps.
I understand.
So they're it. Yeah.
I agree with that. Okay. Now we got to meet Stacy here. If I were to spend enough time at your booth, would each one of these puppets be able to talk to me? And
no.
I'm only seeing about 50 of them here. I mean, you got plenty of time.
There's a reason Stacy is who I have all the time on my hand.
I thought it just because she's cute.
She is cute, but I can do a couple of the voices, but I don't do them justice, and so I stay away from doing them. Everybody wants Chewbacca when I have a Chewbacca here. They want to hear the Chewbacca talk and Yoda.
Uh-huh.
Those are probably the two biggest that everybody's like, do that. And I certainly don't do it justice.
Well, I've got an idea here. I mean, you're here at IndiePopCon. Yep. One of the big attractions here are all the YouTubers.
Yeah.
I say get those guys together, put on a superhero show using their voices and your puppets. I get your next $1 million.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You set it up and I'll make it happen.
All right, we'll do that. All right, so Rebecca, thanks for joining me on the Nerd Up Podcast. Pleasure being with you. I love your stuff. Again, I'll put links on the Facebook page, or our Facebook page, and Nerd Up Podcast webpage. And I'll let you know when this gets posted.
Awesome. It was nice talking to you.
Once again, talking to a friend of the podcast, Mike Kaysinger. Mike, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, Gil. How's it going?
Well, it's going so far so good. Now, we're here at IndiePopCon. You've been doing your typical free sketch for kids thing. Yep. How's that going?
It's going really well. I've a lot of kids stopped by. I actually got a deal with the Alternia Comics publisher, who's got some all-ages books. Cut me a good deal, so I got some comics that I can offer kids.
Oh.
And they're only $1.50, and they're newsprint.
Oh, wow. Another nice ones, too.
Yeah, that's... Well, you can't beat getting three comics for $4.50.
Right. No doubt. Well, see, that's the thing I love about what you're doing with the sketches, with with your C4 Con, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And now you're doing it with these comics, keeping the kids interested in the comics. Yep. Us old guys, okay, I'm an old guy, maybe not you. But anyway, a lot of people thought it was going to die out with us.
Yeah.
But you're bringing it back to the kids. What made you want to do that?
Well, it's like... Honestly, I wasn't making a lot of money doing this at shows, and I decided that if I was going to lose money, I was going to do it my way. So I enjoy the interaction with the kids, and I hate that our area schools have cut a lot of art out of school, and this is kind of my way to give back and try to get kids inspired to draw and, create and things like that, and that's also why I started C4.
Right.
And,
Well, I know with C4, the convention, you donate back money that you raise from there to the arts.
We have a charity live auction this year. All the money will be split up between schools in Richland, Crawford, and Lawrence County. Because, that's the three counties that really I go to a lot.
Right.
So, that's just my way of trying to give back to the community. Trying to do as much as I can. I got some really cool things. The production used storyboard from Return of the Jedi, signed by the producer.
I saw that.
That'll probably be the big item auctioned off last. That was donated by the prop store.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your C4. This year, you're teaming up with my old alma mater, if you will, NerdCon.
Yeah, NerdCon.
And it's going to be a big, huge thing. It's going to be at Lincoln Trail College again, right?
And that's only going to be $5, and you can get into both shows.
That's what the best thing about it is. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what the cost was. It's too much. But you go into a convention, and again, the kids can afford it.
Yeah.
And so, well, what else is going to happen at C4 this year?
We got Mark Dodson, voice actor, who did the Salacious B. Crumb, the little character on Jabba the Hutt.
Right.
From Return of the Jedi, but he also did some of the Gremlins and Mugwugs from the Gremlins movies.
Oh.
And we might, I still got to get the details, but we might be doing a movie night the 28th before the, before the show.
Now you're teaming up with one of our sponsors, Eagle Theaters, on that one, right?
Yep. Oh. Eagle Theaters, and going to have a movie showing Gremlins, I believe.
That'd be nice.
Mark is going to get up and do a little talk before the show, and then you actually get to watch a movie with some of the guys that worked in it.
Nice. That makes it even better. Yeah. So I hope that comes through, because that would be a beautiful thing. Now, the end of the month, July 29th, that's when the C4 Con is.
July 29th.
C4 and NerdCon. So
C4, I just call it convention team-up.
There you go. They're always great team-ups in comic books anyway.
I wanted to move my show to July to September because September just wasn't working last year. And the day that worked best for me was the 29th, and Abigail had hers the 5th of August, and I just said, hey, let's just team up. That way, I don't want to, do that and kind of
right.
screw her over. You know,
right, yeah. And I think it'll work out best for teaming up because you're going to have two aspects of cons. She goes more with the gaming and stuff.
The gaming and cosplay. We got a cosplay contest. Still waiting word from Totoboshiku, Illinois, if they're going to donate the gift cards for prizes.
Okay. But,
some of the... Jerry Rowe, the Vanguard Props.
Okay.
He's making the first prize trophy.
Oh.
And then Jimmy Pinkstaff of Atomic Monster, he's going to do second and third prize. And then I think we're going to do plaques for the best boy and best girl cosplay. So.
Nice. So that's that's July 29th.
July 29th.
Now, Jim Pinkstaff, isn't he with like Indiana Cosplayers or something like that?
He might be. I was going to say
his name's ringing a bell. So
I'll say he was at the show last year, but he's. I think you actually talked to him about coming down to NerdCon, and he wasn't able to. That
right. Okay, that's right. Yep, so, you're right.
But
so.
he's gonna be down. We got Jim O'Rear. He's a does a lot of like B horror type movie, you know.
Right.
Like he's the one that's in the Graveyard Stories that the Moonlight Film guys.
Moonlight Films. Yep,
and
that's it.
We'll be doing a screening of that at the show.
Nice.
And they're gonna do like a Q&A after.
Okay. Yeah, I talked to those guys last year at C4.
Actually, one of the guests here was in that movie, Lloyd Kaufman.
Oh, really?
He was in the Graveyard Stories.
That's right.
Along
okay.
with Brian K. Morris.
Wow. Hey, see, what a big tie-in we all have. It's one big happy family.
Yep. We also have a kids art contest going on. That's
talk to me about that.
It's sponsored by Blick Art Supply. They supplied the prizes. It's for grades between 1st through 12th. It'll be like a 1st through 4th. Top three, 5th through 8th, top three, and 9th through 12th, top three. And it's either draw their favorite superhero villain or create their own superhero villain.
Oh, that's nice.
But I could use some more entries to that because I think I've only got two so far.
Oh, well, how do you get entered into that?
Just draw your favorite character and get it either to me or you can drop it off at the Geek Boom and Vincent's or... Galactic Games and Only, or Vision Comics and Robinson.
Okay.
Before the show.
Before July 29th.
Yeah, I did have the deadline at like July 15th, but as long as I get it before the show, that way I can hang it up.
Right.
You know.
So there you go, kids. Get yourself entered. There's some great supplies, art supplies that are going to be there. So any artist would love to have some of those prizes. So, all right, so Mike Kaysinger, once again, we're getting interrupted by the speaker, but that's okay. The C4 Con with NerdCon's coming up July 29th. The art contest will be at the con. Get your entries in before then. What's your website? How do people find you?
You can find us on Facebook. It's C4 Comics and Pop Culture Con. You can, I think it's C4 Comic Pop Con, Weebly.com. I'm trying to just name it off the top of my head. if you just search Facebook or...
And then Nerd Day Crawford County is for the NerdCon people.
Yeah.
And C4 Comics and Pop Culture Con, okay, on Facebook. Find it on Facebook. That's the easiest way.
Yeah.
So, all right, man. Well, once again, pleasure talking to you. Great to see what you do for the kids, and thanks for joining us
again. Thanks for coming by.
All right, that was Indie PopCon. Isaac, we saw Spider-Man Homecoming. Mm-hmm. I want to jump in on this first. I loved it. Only... for one reason, the fact that it made Peter Parker a teenager again. Tom Holland actually looks like a teenager, acted like a teenager, sounded like a teenager, went through the troubles of a teenager. And the thing about it is, don't get me wrong, I like Tobey Maguire, but he was, 80 when he did this show? Okay, maybe 30? I don't know. But anyway, the thing with that, and that was at the beginning of the comic book movie Jump, where... it was real angsty, a lot of teen angst, and a lot of dark brooding, you know, like all the Batman movies and stuff like that. And
it was the X-Men time around there, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, X-Men came out a little bit after that. And, yeah, I mean, it was a crazy time for movies, and they tried to think that everybody that was in a comic book movie had to be a brooding person, and it had to be dark. And well, this one, it takes you away. Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man kind of went that way, where not the brooding, but kind of brought it back to being a... a teenager.
But the problem wasn't Andrew Garfield. The problem with those was the movies themselves.
Yeah, they had some script issues. But this one, they had the teen angst. They had the troubles that a teenager goes through. They had the things that, you know, Peter Parker goes through. But it wasn't, oh my God, I want to slash my wrists, horrible. It was, yeah. And he just fought his way through it. No big deal. And they didn't have to tell the origin story. You know, so we no longer have to worry about Uncle Ben. I mean, we know the story. We're good. However, Aunt May, the first time ever, was hot. So even Tony Stark was trying to hit on her. But you know what? Yeah, and the special appearances by Tony Stark and Captain America really made it. And I'll close this out before we get to your review here. But my favorite thing was the, you know, you got the post-credit scenes. And you get the Captain America post-credit scene is just freaking hilarious.
It kind of reminded me of the Deadpool post-credit scene.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller parody.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. And it's just,
And it had Ferris Bueller in the movie, too.
That's right. There was a Ferris Bueller scene. But, yeah, it was really, it was well done. I had a blast. I was glad to see Spider-Man pretty much done right. I mean, I can't think of a mistake they made. Other than the fact that they should have done it years ago. But all right, so what do you think?
I thought it was pretty good, but I realized that there are a few things that could have been done differently. Like, for example, there was too much Iron Man in this movie. Like,
I kind of thought that too. Yeah,
I can understand if Iron Man was in it a little bit, but he seemed to be he was part of the main like central plot.
It should have been Spider-Man teams up with Iron Man, maybe.
I would have been okay if it was more, what's his name, Happy, if he was the main plot, because that's just S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, that's what he has to put up with.
But right.
It was Tony Stark the entire time, and he was just there. It felt kind of out of place.
Yeah.
Especially since every other Avenger was doing whatever they're doing, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, one of the really cool things about, I mean, yeah, you're right, I mean, I don't know, maybe they had to do that or something, but it ties in with the Avengers world, and I think that's one of the things they were trying to incorporate. I mean, also with Spider-Man, I forgot to mention this, but they were creating a sequel where they're going to have the Sinister Six, it sounds like. Yeah, you had Michael Keaton playing Adrian Toomes, well, you know, the Vulture.
Was that his name in the movie?
Adrian Toomes?
I didn't remember them specifically mentioning his name.
No, they did Adrian anyway a couple times. Then they get to see Max Gargan, who happens to be also in Better Call Saul. Matt Gargan, in Better Call Saul. And so, you know, the Scorpion's coming. There's another one that was mentioned. What was there?
Shocker.
Oh, yeah, they had Shocker. You had two versions of the Shocker.
In the credits, the second guy was officially, I forget the Shocker's real name.
Yeah, me too.
The second, in the credits, it mentioned the real name of the Shocker, and it said / Shocker number 2.
Right, yeah. And so it's like, oh, okay, that's the guy. And he even had to, like, and it explained why they had the pillowcase looking costume thing. So I always thought that was a funny costume, but they explained it. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I think the alien technology set up for, I think that set up for Scorpion, because it seems like the alien technology could easily be something they could get away with saying, oh, you can't get this off your body because it's alien.
Right.
They don't have to explain any further into why they couldn't remove it or anything like that. There was no J. Jonah Jameson.
No?
That was pretty bad.
There wasn't. But I think, actually, I was glad. Since it wasn't going to be J. Jonah Jameson from the Sam Raimi, I like that guy, you know, the Farmer's Insurance guy.
You mean, oh, I forgot his name.
But anyway, yeah, so, but, you know, I could, it would have been nice to see him maybe once, but we didn't have to, and you're right. It could have been better, but not necessary.
It might have just been me, but I was drawing a lot of parallels between this one and the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The sneak attack, flying glider, the part where Spider-Man, this time almost, got the father of his friend killed.
Right.
And it was also almost the father's fault again.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, they had, instead of Harry Osborn, they had Ned.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he was the, what do you call it, the man in the chair?
Yeah, the man.
Running the computers for him back at the base. But it was funny, good comedic relief, but it's like, it didn't quite in the the canon of Spider-Man comics. So
I don't like how they put Flash in this movie. I mean, I'm not saying how I don't like Flash in the movie. I'm saying I don't like how they portrayed him. Because in the originals, like, he was popular, yeah, but everybody liked him. But in this one, he reminded me of that guy from Bar Rescue that's like, I'm going all in.
Oh, man, there's a cut.
Just the douchebag that nobody really likes.
And another thing, he was on the Quiz Bowl or whatever you call that team.
Yeah, and he was smart, too.
And he's smart, yeah. Flash Thompson was is portrayed in the comics. I'm not putting down people that play sports saying that they're dumb, but Flash Thompson is a dumb jock, and that's the way it makes the character worth it. But they gave him a little more depth, but still, I can see that. All in all, what would you say?
I'd give it an 8 out of 10. It was better. It was much better than the previous Spider-Man movies.
I still love the Spider-Man 2 with Doc Ock.
That one, yeah, that one's pretty good. But the thing is, it was put into the trilogy of
The first one was okay because it was the first time we've had it. Second one was awesome because of the character development and Doc Ock. Just the portrayal of that character.
The third one was Disco Tobey Maguire.
Oh my gosh, the third one was just a big mess. Then we had the Andrew Garfield, which...
the first one was awful.
The first one, oh my god, the Lizard was just... What? Now, okay, so they're building the Sinister Six. We talked about this.
They haven't had Mysterio yet.
Mysterio or the Chameleon?
Who cares about Chameleon?
I'm trying to think of who they could put into the Sinister Six, because we've already had Doc Ock. We've already had...
We've had Doc Ock.
Electro.
We've had Green Goblin. Sandman.
Sandman. So we have Shocker.
Scorpion.
Scorpion and Vulture.
They haven't had Rhino either.
They did kind of have Rhino.
Well, yeah, they did.
Paul Giamatti.
For 2 minutes.
Yeah. So there's a chance they can still maybe bring that suit back. Alien Tech.
What about Beetle? Or what's his name?
Blue Beetle? Blue Beetle?
No, Blue Beetle is from
DC.
Batman.
Yeah, DC.
I'm talking about, like, the cyborg guy.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, but I think it's Beetle, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure it's just Beetle.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Morbius.
Morbius. They haven't had Morbius, the living vampire.
Yeah, that's Smythe. Smythe was mainly popular in the 90s. Wasn't he created just for the 90s show?
Actually, I think so, really. I think that's only the first time I remember. Of course, now they're doing a standalone Venom movie, so they can't have him as Sinister Six. But yeah, a Kraven, that's the only one, that's it. So, but they are going to build into it, and it looks like they'll do it pretty good. We'll see. We always know what the problem is when they bring too many villains into a superhero film, but the Sinister Six really just counts as one villain because that's the way they work.
Yeah.
And so, we'll see. Yeah, I'd 8 out of 10. I'd maybe go one... No, I'd still say 8 out of 10. I'd agree with you on that. It was a fun movie, though.
It was a good movie. It's just there were still faults in it.
The soundtrack was fun. A lot of 80s music in there. You got the Ramones.
That reminded me. That was something else that was good about the original trilogy. I love the soundtrack in the Sam Raimi trilogy movies.
Yeah, they had more modern music of the time.
Well, no, I mean, like, not just soundtrack as in music from actual songs, but I mean, like, the soundtracks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The background music.
The theme song and everything. Yeah.
Like, I liked that in both the Raimi trilogy and the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. Well, this one, though, they brought back the original Spider-Man theme song in an orchestral version at the beginning, so...
They did, but that's a small thing that I have a problem with these... The most recent Marvel movies, they've been having songs that are actual songs and not, like, custom-made, background music that's memorable.
Right.
I know they have them, but...
And yeah, there's
no songs that I want to go back to and listen to that I was like, wow, that sounds really good.
True there. All right. Well, so there you go. 8 out of 10 for the both of us. Averages out to 8 out of 10. So, yeah, it was good, but, there's always things we can pick on. Always. Always. We're the Nerd Up Podcast. That's what we do. So, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Let's wrap it up. I'm Guilty Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
I'm Isaac Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at EvilBacon88. That's evil, but with a B instead of a V.
And also, you're on YouTube. Is that a thing?
Yeah, same YouTube. But yeah.
Okay. All right, and that's it for the podcast. Don't forget, buy our merch. Check out theeagletheater.net. They're one of our proud sponsors. They're the ones that allowed us to see Spider-Man. And we got that really cool popcorn container with Spider-Man's head. So that's it for the Nerd Up Podcast. Stay nerdy.